That's a bizarre theoretical experiment, because we got a lot of animal lovers here. This had to do, theoretically, right? Placing a living cat in some kind of chamber with a little vial of acid. Why did he pick a cat? Why didn't he just say a snake or something?
I don't know. I'm not sure whether he liked cats or not. But he chose a cat, and as a result, there's plenty of cats around the nation named Schrodinger. But it was a thought experiment. There were no actual cats involved, and I'm sure Pete is glad about that.
Yeah.
But the idea is that quantum objects behave very differently from the everyday objects, macroscopic objects that we see. And a macroscopic object like a cat or a piece of paper can only be in one place at one time. But that's not true for quantum objects. Atoms, photons, very tiny particles can be in two places at exactly the same time. And this has been observed in the laboratory. Particles can take two paths, two contradictory paths, go down the right and down the left.
At the same time. How bizarre.
Exactly the same. It is bizarre. And scientists have been trying to get their heads around this for 80-plus years.
Well, that would have bailed me out of a lot of problems in my early days if I could have done that.
Well, you'd only be half there, half in each place.
Well, that's the thing. So, anyways, back to his experiment. So what was he trying to prove?
Well, he was trying to show how absurd this idea of two places in the same time is. So if it's true for atoms, then he said, well, why not set up a box which has two paths? And if you send an atom down one path, nothing happens. And if you send an atom down the other path, it triggers a device that knocks a vial of poison and kills whatever in the box, which happened to be a cat.
All right.
So if an atom goes down the right path, the cat survives. If it goes down the left path, the cat dies. So, if an atom can be in two places at the same time, it can go in the right and the left.
All right. So, theoretically, the cat is dead, and it's not dead.
Exactly. It is dead and not dead at the same time.
At the same time.
That made no sense. And furthermore, by the laws of quantum mechanics, that the atom decides on which path it chose once you observe it. So, once you open the box, the cat decides whether it's alive or dead. So
if you don't look in, you never know the outcome.
Exactly. And in fact, the outcome is indeterminate, that the cat is both alive and dead at the same time until we look to see whether it's alive or dead. And that is absurd. And Schrodinger knew it was absurd. But that's what the mathematics of quantum mechanics tells us. And the mathematics really works. So, I mean, scientists know. I mean, if you look at the equations predict things beautifully. But if you go deep into what the equations mean, it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't seem to work with the universe that we know.
I got to tell you, the brains that think about things like this and their ramifications, these people had to have been geniuses at what they did.
Yes. I mean, the Schrodinger and Heisenberg and Bohr, these were real geniuses of our time. And even the greatest geniuses just couldn't get their heads around this. I mean, Richard Feynman, kind of said at one point, you know, if you can, the equations work, so you can shut up and calculate.
Can you imagine having dinner with him, Charles, talking about his experiment on the cat? I mean, how many people at that table would understand him?
I think very few. Schrodinger himself actually was kind of an interesting character. Apparently, he formulated quantum mechanics, his version of quantum mechanics, while on what was called a late erotic outburst. He went to a chalet in the Alps with his mistress and came down a week later with a new theory.
I love it. Well, with this information, the theory that's out there, how will it change things? How will it give us the knowledge that we need? Stephen Hawking saying that soon we're getting close to finding out the origin of the universe. Is that because of information?
To some extent, yes. I mean, the origins of the universe are closely related to the theory of everything, the idea that we have to come up, the ultimate goal of science is to come up with a set of rules that explains everything in the universe. And the two major theories of physics, relativity, which explains the very large and very heavy and very fast, it works beautifully on large scales. Quantum mechanics, which explains the very small, works beautifully on small scales. But the two theories contradict each other. They're fundamentally at odds. And until scientists resolve the difference between these two theories, there can't be a theory of everything.
Are you a believer now in the multiverse?
That's a really good question. And I have to say, it explains a lot. It really works very well to explain things like Schrodinger's cat and Einstein's spooky action at a distance, which is technically called entanglement. So the consequences are so great that I have trouble believing it, but I'm kind of leaning in that direction.
All right, 20 years ago, if somebody had said, hey, there's more than one universe, Charles, what would you have said?
I would have laughed.
Really?
No way. But more and more scientists are actually convinced that there are parallel universes.
What is changing their views to think that?
Well, a couple of things. One is that as we learn more and more about the universe, we get data about the very earliest bits right after the Big Bang, the inflationary era. There's a satellite called WMAP, which is looking at the radiation remnant from a couple of 100,000 years after the Big Bang. And it is giving us exquisite information on what happened early after the Big Bang. And scientists look at this data, and they can say, ah, there is no evidence that the universe is finite, that it looks from this data that the universe is infinite. And the theories, the straight, plain vanilla theories of inflation, which come after the Big Bang, imply that there's an infinite universe. And if you accept the idea of an infinite universe, and if you accept another premise, which is called the holographic principle, and I can explain this shortly if you'd like.
Sure.
If you accept these two premises, you are more or less bound to the idea that there are parallel universes. And if there are parallel universes, infinite parallel universes, there are universes where there's a copy, where I'm the host of the show and you're my guest. And
oh, that would be interesting.
Yeah, I'm sure it would be a much less interesting show because I can't host for my life.
But and I don't know physics like you do.
There's also a parallel universe where you're the host and you're interviewing a giant sentient purple armadillo who speaks in Latin.
Would I ever be interviewing myself?
Perhaps. There may be a universe where there's two exact copies of you and you're interviewing that exact copy.
See, I sometimes wonder that with, let's say, like deja vu, where you know what someone's going to say, you know what's going to happen. I sometimes think there's something out of kilter. I don't think it has to do with the mind. And I'm just beginning to wonder if these universes are running parallel to each other, but they're just out of alignment, just by a little bit. And we get this shift all the time.
Well, scientists, in one version of the parallel universes, which you alluded to earlier, the multiverse, is that these parallel universes are extraordinarily close to us in that, I mean, in some sense, they're actually on top of us. And there is some level of interaction between the two. And there are people who believe that this weird multiverse image and quantum theory in general are related to psychic phenomena and deja vu. I tend not to be a believer in that sort of stuff, but there are people who take it seriously.